This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Are you driving your car or doing laundry right now? Podcasts go best when they're bundled with another activity. Like Progressive home and auto policies, they're best when they're bundled too. Having these two policies together makes insurance easier and could help you save. Customers who save by switching their home and car insurance to Progressive save nearly $800 on average. Quote a home and car bundle today at progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $793 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2021 and May 2022. Potential savings will vary.
Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Thank you, thank you. This is a moment of joy, and I want to kiss everybody because you are the image of the joy. And he who kisses the joy as it flies lives in eternity sunrise, they said the poet. And this is wonderful to be here. Wonderful. I feel like now really to dive in this ocean of gratitude, of generosity. This is too much. Your generosity, this is... how do you say when the ray...
Wow, what a flashback. What am I listening to here?
Well, this is an iconic Oscar moment. It's Roberto Benigni winning his Oscar for Life is Beautiful in 1999, right after he jumps over all the chairs to get to the stage.
I'll never forget it. Michael Shulman, you're a contributor here at the magazine, and you're working on a big story about the Oscars now, and you're kind of a Hollywood acceptance speech connoisseur.
You could say that.
How come you're so into acceptance speeches?
Well, acceptance speeches at award shows, they're kind of like this genre of dramatic monologue where you get a celebrity who has a very short amount of time to kind of be themselves and express themselves with a countdown clock, usually under very heightened emotions because they've just won an award. So a lot of weird and crazy things can happen. You know, these are people who live rarefied lives, and to see them step out and be themselves for 2 minutes.
Are they really themselves? What are your all-time favorites?
Okay, well, I have a couple of subsets that I really like. So there's the kind of over-the-top exuberance, which is where I'd put Roberto Benigni, and a Cuba Gooding Jr. falls into this category. So you have the excessively weepy ones like Halle Berry and Gwyneth Paltrow. Another subset I like is the—
But Halle Berry's was really moving. I mean, that was an extraordinary moment.
Oh, yeah, because it was a major political moment as well.
This moment, so much bigger than me. This moment is for Dorothy Dandridge, Lena Horne, Diane Carroll. It's for the women that stand beside me, Jada Pinkett, Angela Bassett, Vivica Fox, and it's for every nameless, faceless woman of color that now has a chance because his door tonight has been opened.
Another type I love is the passive-aggressive or angry acceptance speech, like Shirley MacLaine when she won for Terms of Endearment. First, she talked about her past lives, and then she thanked Deborah Winger for her turbulent genius.
Meaning they fought on the set the whole time?
Well, that is not what you want a coworker to say about you. And then there's the genre of, I would call sort of the insight into blatant Hollywood ego run amok.
Who's the tops at that?
Well, you know, an early example is a kind of famous but often misquoted Oscar moment. Maybe you can guess which this is.
I owe a lot to my family for holding me together and loving me and having patience with this obsession of me. But I want to say thank you to you. I haven't had an orthodox career, and I've wanted more than anything to have your respect. The first time I didn't feel it, but this time I feel it, and I can't deny the fact that you like me right now. You like me.
It was very moving when Clark Gable won for the first time, wasn't it? No, that was Sally Field.
But do you know what she was winning for?
Norma Rae?
Ah, no. It was her second Oscar for Places of the Heart.
Ah, yes.
And there's lots of things.
I forgot that film
there's
entirely.
There's lots of things to love in that speech. So you can kind of see this sort of self-aware and sweet sort of you know, version of the self-absorption that all these people have on some level.
Now, earlier this year, Meryl Streep made some headlines with a speech at the Golden Globes that was just all about politics, all about Donald Trump.
And this instinct to humiliate when it's modeled by someone in the public platform, by someone powerful, it filters down into everybody's life because it kind of gives permission for other people to do the same thing.
Now, Donald Trump did not take kindly to that speech at all. Why do you think, Michael, that this captured the attention that it did?
So in a nutshell, she has this self-awareness. She knows that she arrives on this pedestal of being the greatest living actress, and she has a sense of humor about it where she can kind of knock herself down to size. That there was this great Emmy speech she gave once for Angels in America where she said, "There are some days I myself think I'm overrated, but not today." So she's wonderful at talking as herself, about herself in this sort of sly way, but I think what made this Golden Globe speech so extraordinary is that this was really the first televised major award show after the election. And I think there was just this dark feeling that had been percolating. And what Meryl Streep did was come in and use her stature and the moment of getting this Lifetime Achievement Award to, I think, give voice to something that a lot of people were feeling. And the stuff that she talked about, it wasn't partisan issues. You know, she spoke about decency and empathy and things that shouldn't be partisan, but that a lot of people have just felt have vanished very suddenly from American life.
When did this all start? Meryl Streep's not the first to use a Hollywood's award ceremony as a political forum in a way. When did this become a thing?
Well, for the first couple decades, Oscar speeches were really short and polite, and you know, you'd have Elizabeth Taylor come up and just say, "Thank you so much," and then leave. I think it was really the 70s that they evolved into something more interesting. The most famous and the one I think will never be topped being when Marlon Brando won the Oscar for The Godfather in 1973 and in his place sent a Native American activist named Sachin Littlefeather to decline the award.
"I'm representing Marlon Brando this evening, and he has asked me to tell you in a very long speech, which I cannot share with you presently, because of time, but I will be glad to share with the press afterwards that he very regretfully cannot accept this very generous award. And the reasons for this being are the treatment of American Indians today by the film industry, excuse me, and on television, in movie reruns, and also with recent happenings at Wounded Knee. I beg at this time that I have not intruded upon this evening, and that we will, in the future, our hearts and our understandings will meet with love and generosity. Thank you on behalf of Marlon Brando."
Kind of a touching speech, isn't it?
It is. It is.
And much made fun of at the time.
Yeah. And I think looking back, we can probably credit it as being completely punk. It's a brilliant stroke of political Dadaist theater. Mm-hmm. But the 70s also had a number of political speeches that were also divisive. In 1975, the documentary producer Bert Schneider read a letter on behalf of the North Vietnamese thanking the anti-war movement, and then Frank Sinatra had to come out moments later and apologize.
That was for the film Hearts and Minds.
Mm-hmm, yeah. And Vanessa Redgrave in 1978 talking about the Zionist hoodlums, which she was also booed. Jane Fonda the next year doing her speech in sign language for Coming Home. So you get the kind of evolution of speeches that have causes attached to them or speak to the current political moment. Skipping ahead to the current century, I think the really defining political Oscar speech was in 2003 when Michael Moore won the Oscar for Bowling for Columbine. And this was March 2003. So the Iraq War was starting. The drumbeats were playing. And he got up there and he talked about how we have a fictional election that gave us a fictional president going to war for fictional reasons.
"We are against this war, Mr. Bush. Shame on you, Mr. Bush. Shame on you. And anytime you've got the Pope and the Dixie Chicks against you, your time."
You know what's amazing there, Michael, is Supposedly all of liberal Hollywood is gathered in the auditorium, and what you're hearing is a lot of booing and a lot of derision coming from the seats.
Yeah. I mean, it seems so quaint now to boo someone for objecting to the Iraq War. A more recent one that I thought was really moving was 2 years ago, 2015. This was the first year of the Oscars So White controversy because all of the acting nominees for the first of 2 years in a row were white. And the movie Selma, which is, of course, about the Civil Rights March in Selma, was only nominated for Best Picture and Best Song. Its director, Ava DuVernay, was snubbed, and its actors were not nominated. But it won Best Song, and John Legend and Common got up. And what was incredible about the speech is that it was really up to them to represent the movie and also to represent not only this, racial tension that was going on, in the subtext of the ceremony, but also that was going on throughout America.
We wrote this song for a film that was based on events that were 50 years ago, but we say that Selma is now because the struggle for justice is right now. Yeah. We know that the Voting Rights Act that they fought for 50 years ago is being compromised right now in this country today.
And now President Trump has decided to investigate voter fraud, but with quite a different accent, quite a different motivation, obviously. What might we expect from this year's Oscars speeches? What are you looking for when you turn on your TV that night?
Well, I sort of hope that this year's Oscars has some kind of political moment of catharsis. I mean, these are the first Oscars of the Trump era. And what's so weird is that the people who win and who are up there presenting or speaking must know that they are in some sense speaking directly to the president. I mean, President Trump, could easily have his feelings hurt and take to Twitter. And then there's a whole army of, trolls and people with, Pepe the Frog avatars who come after you. So I'll be really interested to see if there's someone who gets up and really speaks from the heart in the way that Meryl Streep did. But I do think that the Academy Awards will need that on some level, because like so many things in American life right now, I think award shows have to figure out what their role is in this, horrible Twilight Zone episode that we're in. What makes it especially odd this year is that the main movie that is storming the Academy Awards is completely apolitical, which is La La Land.
Escapism to the nth degree.
Yeah, and a lot of people have credited its success to the fact that it's escapist, that it's take you away from your troubles sort of movie and dance and sing. I think it won't win everything. For one thing, it has two Best Song nominees against each other. So,
we're down to 13.
Yeah, 13 is at most. Okay. But I do hope we see some love for other movies like Moonlight and Fences. There's a great slate of movies out there.
Michael, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Michael Shulman is reporting for The New Yorker on the Oscars So White controversy. The Oscars are broadcast later this month, Sunday the 26th.
On Notes from America, we have conversations with people across the country about how we can truly become the nation that we claim to be. Each week, we talk about race, our politics, education, relationships, usually all of them, because everything's connected. And you, our listeners, are at the center of those conversations. I'm Kai Wright. Join me on Notes from America, wherever you get your podcasts.